you will turn your Bibles to the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 4. And I know we're supposed to be studying in Mark, but this is sort of a little side trip, and I do this quite often. If something is mentioned, I'll go off and preach maybe a couple sermons on it, a couple messages, lessons on it, because we're in no hurry to get through it, and it's all good stuff, so... The temptations of Christ, they're just barely mentioned in the Gospel according to Mark, two verses. We aren't even told what those temptations are, but just that it happened. But in Matthew and Luke, they go into the temptations more detailed, and it's from Luke that I want to start. In chapter 4, verse 5 and 6, says, "And the devil, taking him up into a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it." Now, people will go to this verse and show and try to prove that the devil is the king of this world, the god of this world, as 2 Corinthians says, and we'll get to that verse. I don't think that verse says exactly what some people try to make it mean. So this verse, we have the devil saying, for that, which is all the kingdoms and all the glory of them, all the power, he says, that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. Meaning, I'm in charge, and it's my will, whoever I desire to give it to, that's who I give it to. Now, people will go to this and they'll give the devil this power and this glory and this authority. And what I'd like to show this morning is that I think it's a lie. The devil is a lie, liar. He's the father of it, we're going to see in John 8. But, you know, the Bible records lies. You can trick people or have a little fun with people, and you can say, is everything in the Bible true? And obviously, you know, if they're a good Baptist, they're going to say, yeah, the Bible's true from cover to cover, and the cover too, right? But the Bible records lies. So you can't say everything in the Bible, everything that is said in the Bible is true, because no, the Bible truthfully records lies that are said. So there's a lot of lies in the Bible, but it's truthfully recorded that this person or the devil said these lies. And you got to be careful just going in, especially when Satan is involved, going in and taking his word for it that he's saying the truth, because he might not be saying the truth. So what I'd like to do, and we're not going to turn to all of these, but I'd just like to quickly go through New Testament and Old Testament and remind you about some of the lies that were truthfully recorded in the Bible. And then we're going to get to, these are by people, and then we're going to get to lies by Satan. Genesis 4:9, we have Cain, God asked Cain, "Where art thou brother? Where is your brother?" And Cain says, "I know not." Now, that's a lie. He had killed him over here, and he probably left the body there. And if he didn't leave the body there, he took the body somewhere else. So he knew where Abel was. But he lied. And it's truthfully recorded that he says, "I know not." And that definitely is a lie. Genesis 12:11 and Genesis 20, verse 5, we have Abraham lying about Sarah. And Abraham instructing Sarah to lie. Well, when they ask you who you are, say that you're my sister. You know, which is a half-truth, because Genesis 20 does go on to say that, well, and Abraham sort of excuses himself. He says, well, she is my half-sister. You know, she's the daughter of my, I don't know if it was my mother, but not the daughter of my father, or not, I'm not sure how that works, but she is a half-sister. But anything that you say to deceive is a lie. Even if it's a half-truth, even if it is the truth, you can say the truth. And it becomes a lie because you're deceiving somebody. So Abraham definitely deceived about saying that she's my sister. Sarah lied when the angel says, "You laughed." You know, when I said that you're going to have a child. And Sarah says, "I laughed not." That's a lie. Just flat out, right, bold-faced lie. Genesis 26, Isaac does the same thing Abraham did. Isaac says the same thing. He goes somewhere and says, my wife, she's my sister. That's just the flat-out lie. Jacob lies to Isaac. Isaac says, bring my son, bring some venison, I want to give you a blessing. And Jacob comes in instead of Esau, the firstborn. Jacob comes in, and Isaac says, you know, the voice is Jacob's, but let me feel your arm. Yeah, you're hairy, and yeah, you've got one of his coats on, so you sort of smell like the outdoors. And your voice sounds like Jacob, but I guess you're Esau. And he asks him point blank, are you my son Esau? And Isaac says, yes. I am Esau, your firstborn. Flat out lie. It's truthfully recorded in the Bible, but you can't believe what he just said because it was a lie. Potiphar's wife in Genesis 39, when she accuses Joseph of trying to rape her, she says, the Hebrew servant which thou brought in unto us, he came in to mock me. Now, that's a false accusation. That's a lie. Joseph never did anything against her, except repulse against her. Exodus 1:19, I'm not sure whether this is a lie or it was the truth or whatever, but, you know, Pharaoh had given the order, kill every male baby, every male Jewish baby, you kill him. And the midwives didn't do it. They left the babies alive. So Pharaoh brought them in and says, why haven't you done what I said? I said, kill all the boy babies. And the midwife says, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come unto them. Now, you know, we don't know definitely that was a lie. But obviously, if they've got the job of midwife, there was a need for it. So the Jewish women were not so lively that the midwives never had to perform their jobs. So that's sort of partly maybe true, but it could probably is a lie too, that's just their excuse for saving all the boy babies. In Exodus 9, Pharaoh says to Moses, entreat the Lord to take away this plague and I will let you go. Well, we know that Pharaoh said that on a number of times, and it took all the way to the 10th plague before Pharaoh finally kept his word and says, okay, get out of here, go. But he said it several times, okay, you just go out and stop this one, and I'll let you go. That's a lie. That's a lie. Exodus 32:24, Aaron lies to Moses. You know, Moses comes down out of the mountain. God says, you go down to your people. And Moses says, it sounds like war in the camp. And no, it's not war. It's the people naked, jumping around, dancing around this golden calf. And Moses says to Aaron, what are you doing here? Well, I just threw in the gold and out came this calf. Yeah. Now you know that's a lie. No, the Bible even says that the Jewish men, they fashioned it and formed it and plated it. And they formed this golden calf. But Aaron says, no, I just sort of threw it in the fire, and it just came out this way. You know, obviously that's a lie. 1 Samuel chapter 20, we've got Jonathan lying to Saul, his father. David's seat is empty at the banquet table. And the first night, Saul didn't say anything. Second time, Saul says, where's David? He's supposed to be here. His seat is empty. And Jonathan says, well, David earnestly asked of me leave to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city. My brother hath commanded me to be there. All of that is lie. Because David's out in the field waiting for Jonathan to come out and tell him whether Saul's mad at him or not. None of that was true. But again, we have Jonathan lying to David. I mean, to Saul. 1 Samuel 22, we have David lying. He's out and about and, you know, it's like, well, why are you here? And David says, the king hath commanded me a business and hath said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee. That's all a lie. King Saul didn't send him on any secret mission. No, David's just given an excuse of why he's here. 2 Kings chapter 5, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, he lies to Naaman. You know, Naaman got healed, and Naaman tried to give him, you know, a piece of clothing and some silver or gold. And Elisha said, no, I'm not going to accept any of your stuff. You know, God healed you. Go your way. Well, Gehazi says, hey, why didn't we take that? We could have used that money. We could have used the new clothes. So Gehazi runs after Naaman and says, my master hath sent me to take the talent of silver and the two changes of garments. That's a lie, a lie, a lie. And, of course, he got his for it because it comes back to Elisha. And Elisha says, well, where have you been? And Gehazi says, well, I haven't been anywhere. Yeah, I saw you. I saw you when you went to Naaman and when you took that stuff. The leprosy that was on him is going to be on you. And Gehazi was leprous until the end of his day. But that was a lie. But it's faithfully recorded in the Bible that he said it. 2 Kings chapter 6, Elisha. Now, you know, we kind of expect certain people to lie. When Cain lies, no, I don't know where Abel is. When sinners lie, it's expected. Because, you know, sinners don't do anything except sin. But when God's choice servants, Abraham, David, and here Elisha, when they lie, it's like, man, oh man, does God okay lying? I mean, these people, it seems like God really wasn't too displeased about this. So here's Elisha, he's a Dothan, and the king of Syria, every time he goes out to war, the Israelites are always there waiting for him. And he says, we've got a spy in our midst. And you know, who's spying and telling the Israelites where we're going to be next? And somebody says, no, it's not a spy. None of us are spies. But it's Elisha, the prophet of God. Their God is telling Elisha where we're going to go next. So he sends the soldiers out after Elisha. And when the soldiers surround the city, and we won't go into my most favorite story of all, when Elisha's servant says, look at all those soldiers, we're dead, we're dead. And God opens his eyes to see the fiery soldiers of God. And Elisha says, no, 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 we're not alone, we're not dead. So Elisha goes out and talks to the soldiers, though. And what does he say to him? He says, this is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. Now, he is the man that they're seeking. But he says, no, you're in the wrong way. This is the wrong city. You're looking for the wrong man in the wrong place. I'll bring you to the man whom you seek. But he led them to Samaria. Now, Elisha, he just lied to him. Now, I might say, well, this is a matter of war. You know, the evil side against the good side. So lying is okay in battle. But it's still a lie by Elisha. New Testament. Matthew 2, 8, Herod lies to the wise men. You know, the wise men go in and talk about this king, and they've seen a star, and they're going to go worship him. And what does Herod say? Well, you go diligently search out where this king is, because I also want to come and worship him. That's a lie, but it's faithfully recorded in the Bible. Matthew 16, Simon Peter rebukes the Lord after the Lord says, I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be crucified, I'm going to die, and I'm going to be raised again. And Peter says, be it far from thee, this shall not be unto thee. And it's interesting how Jesus turns around to him and says, get thee behind me, Satan. Peter lies, and Jesus says, it's from Satan. Because, you know, Satan is the father of lies, which we'll see the verse that actually says it to us. Matthew 26. Again, Peter says to Jesus, though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Though I should die, yet will I not deny thee. Now, you know, you might say, well, that's not really a lie. That was his deep desire. He wanted to follow Jesus. He didn't want to deny Jesus. He would die if he had to follow Jesus. And that's a good desire, but you don't say things that you have no control over. You know, we can't predict the future. So really, if you say, tomorrow I'm going to do this, well, what does the Bible say? Say, if the Lord will, tomorrow we're going to do this. Because we don't know what tomorrow's going to do, going to be. John 19, Pilate says to Jesus, knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and the power to release thee? That's a lie. In fact, Jesus tells him, you don't have any power at all over me, except what God's given you and allowed you to have. You don't have any power, but Pilate sort of thought he did have the power. Acts 5, Sapphira, remember them, sold the property for so much. And the husband had already been carried out dead. And then so Peter asked the wife, and she comes, did you sell the land for this amount? And she says, yea, we sold the land for so much. Flat out lie. And of course, she paid with her life. She was carried out dead, too. Same guys that carried your husband out is going to carry you out. Now, let's go to the lies of Satan. Genesis 3:4 comes to Eve. Well, what did God tell you? Well, we're not allowed to touch it. We're not allowed this. We can eat of every plant freely except for this one. We're not allowed to touch it. We're not allowed to look at it. We're not allowed to think about it. And, of course, she's embellishing. You know, she didn't quote exactly what God said. But Satan says, you shall not surely die. That was a lie. Straight out of hell. That was a lie. Because God said, on the day you eat, you shall surely die. Very emphatic. You shall surely die. And Satan says, no, you shall not surely die. Exactly the opposite of what God says. In Job chapter 1 and in chapter 2, we have two places where Satan lies. Satan says, put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. Which was a lie, because Job never did curse. At the end of the book, it says, in all of this, Job sinned not. Chapter 2, again, Satan says, put forth thine hand now, touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And that didn't happen either. He lied again. Isaiah 14, we have Satan saying, I will ascend unto heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars. I will be like the Most High. And none of those things happened. In fact, he was thrown out of heaven. He was cast down to the earth. So, again, Satan lies. So, I didn't check this because I don't know where to find them all, but it would be a good search. Every time the devil speaks, is it ever the truth? Find a place where what the devil says is actually the truth. Like I said, I looked at those spots, and there might be more places where the devil actually speaks, like here at the Temptations. So when we get to Luke 4, and the devil says, all these kingdoms are mine. All the glory of them is mine. They're under my power. I can give them to whomever I want to give them. Now, on the track record that Satan has, should we consider that probably the truth or maybe probably a lie? Well, past record says that every time he speaks, it's a lie. So maybe we ought to put it under the category that it's not the truth, right? But if you turn to 2 Corinthians, I wanted to save time on reading all those lies that are recorded in the Bible, so we could turn to several other scriptures. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, this is the verse that people will go to prove that Satan is the god of this world and does command all the kingdoms and is the owner and the overseer of all the kingdoms of the world. Starting verse 3 says, but if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the god of this world, and everybody reads that and they think Satan, the god of this world, hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. The god of this world hath blinded their minds so that they cannot believe. You know, the god of this world, I don't necessarily think it has to be Satan. Nothing in these verses tell us that it has to be a person.
Right.
It could be a thing. The god of this world today is being PC. Accepting everything, accepting nothing, everything goes, sin is not sin. That's one of the gods of this world. We all have to be equal. We have to accept everybody, whatever everybody's little niche is. We have to accept them and go with them. One of the gods of this world is fame. Everybody has to have their little 15 minutes of fame on the TV. You do something crazy just to get on YouTube, you know? Everybody wants to have their name put out there and be a star for at least their 15 minutes. That's one of the gods of this world. It's blinded their eyes. That's the only thing they think about, the only thing they want to do. A couple of scriptures, again, we won't turn to these, but Matthew 12, the Pharisees called the devil the prince of the devils. The prince of the devils. Jesus, three times in John 12, John 14, and John 16, he calls the devil the prince of this world. Ephesians 2, the devil is called the prince of the power of the air. Now, I don't know about you, but I think the Bible usually uses the correct word that it means. I mean, I think God knows what he's doing, and he picks the right word for his message. And he keeps using the word prince. Now, prince, obviously, in the hierarchy of things, is not the head cheese. You know, there's some people above the prince. So, Jesus, three times, and John calls him the prince. Paul calls him the prince. Ephesians 6, talk about rulers of the darkness of this world. Now, that's plural, rulers of darkness. Not just one ruler. So Satan is not the god of this world, as in he's the controller of this world. He might be one of the gods of this world, because there are certain people that actually worship Satan. But if you talk to the normal lost sinner on the street and talk about devil, and do you worship the devil? They would say no. They don't worship the devil. The devil doesn't even probably have to bother them. They're unsaved. They just follow their Adamic nature into sin. They just sin naturally, you know? So, you know, does the devil really have to work on them? No, he's already got them. They're already lost. They're still lost right now. So, either a god or a prince or a master or anything like that that's in a position of authority, you can put anything as your master. It's anything that you obey, anything that you give reverence to, anything that you spend a lot of time on, anything that you think about a lot, anything that you want to please. Those would be your gods or your masters or your princes in your life. Anything like that that you're a servant of. Anything that you serve is your master, is your God. That's what you serve. Well, in Matthew 6, and again we won't turn to that, but Matthew 6, Jesus said, you cannot serve two masters. Either you love one, hate the other. And you know the two masters that he said, one was God and the other was money, mammon, things, earthly things, base things. We usually retranslate it as money. So is money a god? Does money have power over you? Can money dictate things? Sure. Now, money is an inanimate thing. It can be used for good. But for a lot of people, money is their god. That's what Jesus says. There's two masters. You choose which master you want, God or money. Things of this world you could put in there instead of money. Things of this world, and how many people, that's their whole goal in life, is to make more money, live a cushier life, have a bigger house, drive a nicer car. That is their God. That's who they serve. So the God of this world might be money. Because Jesus says that could be one of your masters. God or money. Those are opposites. He didn't say God or the devil. By the way, just throwing this in, you know, the devil is not the opposite of God anyway. People come up with this dichotomy that God's here and the devil's over here, and there's this big struggle between God and the devil, and they're equals, but they're opposites. One's good, one's evil. That's a false dichotomy. That's not the balance. God is God. There's no equal. There's no opposite of him that's like him. No creator, no powerful being, the self-willed being. God is God. Satan is a subservient being of God, a created thing. We sometimes pit the devil with God, but here in this verse, in Matthew, Jesus didn't. No, he says you can't serve two masters. He didn't say God and the devil. He said God and money, things of this world. Maybe that's your God. Maybe that's the God of this world that Paul was talking about in 2 Corinthians. The God of this world that has blinded their eyes. It's money, fame, fortune, things of this world. We will turn to this because I want you to see it. Turn to Philippians chapter 3. If you're not convinced yet, maybe this will help. But Philippians chapter 3, talking about who people's gods are. And again, like I said, we instantly think it has to be a person or a thing, either God the Father, Jehovah, or Satan as a god. But no. Paul in Philippians 3, and we'll read two verses, verse 18 and 19, says, for many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly. Doesn't say whose God is Satan. These evil people that he's really talking bad about, the enemies of the cross of Christ, he's not saying their God is Satan. No, he says their God is their belly, things that they want to have on their own desires, their own lust, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. That's the God of their belly, their lust, these physical things, carnal things, he calls them in another spot. So right here it says that God is their belly. Now, are we going to make a little idol to our belly and say this is the God that we bow down and worship to? That's the God that these people are worshiping? That's what it says. The God is their belly. It doesn't necessarily have to be Satan himself. Turn to Romans chapter 6. Like I mentioned, your God is anything that you serve, anything that you spend time on, anything that you spend your thinking on, that would be your God. And it might be different for different people. Paul, for these false people here, he says their God is their belly, earthly things. But in Romans chapter 6, verse 6 says, knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. Maybe sin is your God. You just love to sin. You love to do this. You talk to a lot of people that get drunk and carouse around, and they say, yeah, we're having fun. That's their God, just to have fun. A lot of churches have fallen into that. They think everything has to be fun. The word fun is not in the Bible, by the way. But the word fun, you know, happen to have fun all the time. Well, you talk to the early church people, the disciples and the apostles, and if you said, you know, we need to make this thing more fun for people, they would have laughed at you. They would have said, you're a heretic. What do you mean make this thing more fun? This is serious business. We're serving God. We're living spiritual lives here in service to God. What do you mean make it more fun? There's God's believers are out there being fed to the lions. You want to make this more fun? Well, we've got to make it fun for the kids, you know. So these people, they serve sin. Verse 12. Let not sin, therefore, reign in your mortal body. Now, I don't know about you, but royalty reigns. Kings reign. God reigns. And he says, let not sin reign in your mortal body. Yeah, a lot of people, that's their God, that's their king, is sin. And sin is reigning over them. They obey it. They love it. They lust after it. They think about it. They go toward it. He says, let not, therefore, sin reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey in the lust thereof. Jump down to verse 14. For sin shall not have dominion. You notice all these words that the Holy Spirit told Paul to use? It's about being Lord over you. Yeah, sin has dominion over you. And he's saying, don't, you know, in the church, this shouldn't happen. You shouldn't have dominion. For ye are not under the law, but under grace. Jump down to verse 16. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are. So if you're obeying sin, if that's your God, you are servants to that God of sin, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. Verse 17, but God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered. You were the servants of sin. That was who your God was. Verse 19, I speak after the manner of men because of the infirmity of your flesh. For as ye have yielded your members servants to uncleanness, and to iniquity unto iniquity. Even so now yield your members servants to righteousness unto holiness. For when you were servants of sin, you were free from righteousness. That's what Jesus says. You can't serve two masters. And that's what Paul's saying. Either you're servants of sin or you're servants of Christ. You're servants of sin or you're servants of righteousness. And he goes on, verse 22, he says, but now being made free from sin and become the servants to God, the opposite of God is sin, not Satan. Right. So he says, you were made free from being servants of sin, but you've now become servants of God. If you turn to John chapter 8, if you would. John chapter 8. I'll find it here. John chapter 8, verse 33. And he answered and said, they answered and said, you know, talking about the truth and being free in verse 31 and 32, about being free and knowing the truth. Verse 33, they answered him, we be Abraham's seed and were never in bondage to any man. It's talking about somebody having the rule over you, being bondage to any man. How sayest thou, ye shall be made free? Because they're thinking they're already free. And Jesus answered them, verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. Servant of sin. The servant abideth not in the house forever. Turn to Daniel chapter 4, if you would. Daniel chapter 4. Now you might say, well, this is Old Testament. Well, Satan was alive and well during the Old Testament time. There were kingdoms in the Old Testament. So Daniel chapter 4, and king has a dream here. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And in this dream, God talks to him. And verse 17, it says, Daniel 4:17 says, "This matter is by the decree of the watchers." And study that. Find out who the watchers are. Yeah. Read commentaries on that. You'll come up with all kinds of interesting ideas on who the watchers are. UFO conspirators would really love this verse. You know, who are the watchers? Well, that's the aliens, the grays, and the, I don't know, the whites or whatever colors they have for them. They would love this, the watchers. That almost sounds like a science fiction movie, doesn't it? The watchers. So anyway, this matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand of the word of the holy ones to the intent that the living may know. Now, what is it that he wants the living to know? That the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. Not just in heaven, but he rules in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Now, God in a dream to this king says, God, Jehovah, owns the kingdoms and gives them to whomever he will. But we've got Satan in Luke 4 saying, these kingdoms are all mine and I can give them to whomever I will. Now, who are we going to believe? God or Satan? God here says, no, they're mine, and I give them to whomsoever I will, setteth up over it the basest of men. God's in charge of setting up the leaders of the country. And if you missed it once in this chapter, and you think, well, dreams, they can be deceiving, maybe Satan can give you a dream. Look in verse 25. This is Daniel speaking. And this is the interpretation of the dream. And this is an interpretation, is straight from God. The interpretation is that they shall drive thee from men, thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, they shall make thee eat grass as an oxen, they shall and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know. Now what was the whole purpose for Nebuchadnezzar having been like an animal, growing talons and fur and out in the, till thou know that the Most High ruleth the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will.
Right.
It's in God's power. And in case you missed it the second time, look in verse 32. And they shall drive thee from men, thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, they shall make thee the grass as oxen, seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Now, I would say, let's let God be true, and every other entity a liar. Men, Satan, whoever you want to put in there. God is true. God says he owns the kingdom, and he gives them to whomsoever he will. Turn back to John chapter 8, if you would. And again, like I said, your reputation will sometimes answer questions about whether you're believed or not. John chapter 8, and this is Jesus talking. He says, he's talking to the Pharisees, Sadducees, and all the Jewish leaders. Verse 44. John 8:44. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth. He does not live in truth. He lives in lying, and he loves lies. And he goes on to say, because there is no truth in him, when he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. Again, should we look at Luke 4 when Satan says, these are all mine, and I can give it to you if you just bow down and worship me. I can get it, they're under my control. Well, Jesus says he's a liar and the father of lies. Look in Acts chapter 5. We referred to this, Ananias and Sapphira lying to the church, being faithfully recorded in the scriptures. But it's interesting how Peter talks about the lie that they said. Acts chapter 5, verse 3. But Peter said, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie to the Holy Ghost and keep back part of the price of the land? Satan hath filled your heart to lie. He's the father of lies, Jesus says. If you turn one more scripture, Revelation chapter 20. Several verses in Revelation chapter 20. Again, we have some information about the devil. Revelation 20, we'll start in verse 1. It says, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit, great chain in his hand, and he laid hold on that the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan." All these things are really the same person. Whether you want to call him a dragon, if he appears as a serpent, you want to call him the devil, if you want to call him Satan, bound him 1,000 years, cast him into the bottomless pit, shut him up, and set a seal on him that he should deceive the nations no more, till the 1,000 years were fulfilled. Deceive the nations. That's his job. That is the number one characteristic that the Bible right here gives of the devil. What does the devil do? He deceives. He lies. And then if you look in verse 8, again, talking about the devil being let out for a while, it says, "And shall go out," what, as soon as he's released, what does it say that he's going to do? He's going to go out to deceive the nations, which are in the four quarters of the earth. So back to my original statement that in Luke 4, when Satan says, "These are all my kingdoms, these are all my glory, I've got power over them, I can give them to whomever I want, they're in my hand, just bow down and worship me, I'll give them to you right now." People will say, "Well, yeah, see, Satan, he's the god of this world, he has control, he could have given, that could have been a shortcut." Well, no, I think Jesus knew right away that that was a lie. But he didn't attack the lie. You know, sometimes we get so picky on, "Well, that's a lie. I want to fix that. That needs to be corrected." Jesus didn't say, well, you're the father of lies and you're lying to me right now, but not yours. No, he went to the root part of the temptation was to worship Satan.
Right.
And that's what people were doing when they let anything else rule their lives. Satan becomes their god. Sex becomes their god, fame becomes their god, sin becomes their god, money becomes their god. Anything like that can become the god of this world. Different god for different people. But Jesus didn't go into all of that, "Well, no, it's not under your power." He went right to the root of the matter and saying, "Worship God and him only. I will not worship you. Worship God. God is the only one that deserves worship." So I know it took a long, long time to get to the root of the matter. But if you're ever talking to somebody and they talk about that, you know, you can wrap it up in just a couple minutes or so, talking about all the lies in the Bible. You know, there's lies recorded in the Bible. You know, if you want to shock them, you can say, "There's lies in the Bible." But there are lies that are faithfully recorded that other people said. And definitely Satan, he is the deceiver. He is the father of lies. So we shouldn't trust anything he says.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Good.